Campus FM jippreżenta Jum fil-ħajjata. Produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni tal-Liam Gawċi u Emmanuel Buttigieġ.
Inselmilkom iż-semmija għal-programm ieħor Jum fil-ħajja ta'. Nibdew mal-ewwel biex nitkellmu dwar il-book review jew il-ktieb li nkunu qegħdin nitkellmu fuq illum u nkunu qegħdin nitkellmu fuq ktieb li għadu kif ħareġ ftit tal-ġimgħa ilu Proceedings of History Week 2015, The 1565 Great Siege, The Founding of Valletta and Their Lasting Effects. Edited minn Simona Zoppardi, Jonathan Borch u David Mallia. Dan huwa il-frott ta' konferenza li kienet History Week pratikament li kienet saret fi 2015 fejn għandek ġabra ta' papers interessantissimi li ħarsu lejn l-assedju l-kbir dan l-assedju l-kbir li konna din nikkommemoraw fl-2015 imma huwa interessanti għax hemm ħafna studji ġodda kważi jiena dejjem taffaxxinani dan is-suġġett tal-assedju l-kbir kemm għandna ħafna informazzjoni fuq iżda xorta qatt baqa' ħafna xi jsir. Kemm nagħti ftit eżempju ta' waħda mill-papers li hawn ta' Albert Ganado, Fresh Discoveries of Malta Siege Maps, hija paper interessantissima fejn anke Dr. Ganado jitkellem dwar il-copper plate li mhux inxtrat minn ġo kollezzjoni privata ta' Perez d'Aleccio, kif ukoll hemm State 2 ta' mappa ta' Giovanni Francesco Comicio, huma hemm ħafna dettalji żgħar li jagħtu kulur lil din l-ammont kbir ta' immaġini tal-assedju l-kbir ta' kif kienet qed taraħ l-Ewropa f'dak iż-żmien il-lenti tal-Ewropa kienet fuq Malta u kif qegħdin jarawha l-Ewropej is-sitwazzjoni li kienet għaddejja f'Malta fis-sajf tal-1565.
Kif qed inti lejjem għandek ġabra ta' xogħlijiet differenti, l-ewwel kontribuzzjoni fil-volum u kienet anke l-opening lecture hija ta' Roger Crowley. Roger Crowley kien fil-fatt mistieden Malta mid-Dipartiment tal-Istorja tal-Università u anki di kienet kollaborazzjoni bej il-Malta Historical Society u d-Dipartiment tal-Istorja, waħda mill-kooperazzjoni li naħseb ta' offrott tajb ħafna. Roger Crowley, semija fi kunu familjari miegħu, kiteb isa triloġija ta' volumi, wieħed fuq Venezia, wieħed fuq Malta u l-Mediterran u liħor fuq Lepanto. U anki kienet l-idea li nġibuh Malta għaliex appuntu kien ix-xogħol tiegħu huwa interessanti ħafna. U fatti Crowley tkellem f'dik l-okkażjoni u anki jetgħu fil-volum fuq kif l-assedju ta' Malta qisu kien il-Vjenna fil-Mediterran. Ovvjament Vjenna kienet ukoll għaddiet minn assedju ftit żmien qabel. Kellek huba ġewġ perspettivi interessanti u anki kontrastanti, waħda ta' Carmelo Vassallo. Nisejn dwek il-lenti Spanjola fuq dal-avveniment u l-oħra ta' Charles Swirep iktar il-lenti Franċiża. Naturalment, anki dikinhar kienet offrit okkażjoni għal-kontrast u diskussjoni ħelwa interessanti fija nifisha. Il-paper ta' John Kembri sabiħa ħafna fuq il-ġeografija u naħseb bħala storiċi dejjem napprezzaw għalkemm forsi mhux dejjem niftakru biżejjed l-importanza tal-ġeografija u
x'għalna ħafna fuq Abrodel.
Puntu tiddeterminalek ħafna affarijiet. Mbagħad għandek ġewġ kontribuzzjonijiet mill-lenti arkeoloġika li huma vera importanti. Waħda miktuba minn tlieta min-nies, Nathaniel Cotaillar, John Samutaja Ferro, Maverick Spiteri. U l-oħra wkoll minn grupp ta' nies, Christian Mifsud, Ella Samutaja Ferro u Anthony Patch.
Nenti friska ħafna dik.
Iva, u jalla jkun hemm iktar għaliex suppost wet mir-ruoli ta' sovrintendenza hija appuntu li tippubblika regolarment ir-rapporti tagħha. Ma jsirux biżejjed kemm suppost isiru fil-fatt dawn. U nkomplu għaddejn David Mallia li jitkellem fuq Dragut, Carlos Nieto Sanchez, perspettiva Spanjola. Kenna kontribuzzjoni sabiħa ħafna ta' Jean-Paul De Lucca fuq kif ċertu Giano Peluzio jitkellem fuq l-assedju fil-poezija tiegħu, dak kien anki skolar importanti ħafna fl-epoka. Francesco Menchetti, l-aspetti tal-arkitettura. Thomas Freller, kif n-nies tkellmu fuq l-assedju. Christian Mifsud fuq mbagħad mxejna lejn il-Belt u għal darba oħra l-Belt kif tidher fil-Mapeb. Jozen Vella, interessanti wkoll kif jiġi mallem l-assedju li fadal naħseb ħafna x'ngħidu dwaru. Joseph Magro Conti fuq il-mappeb ta' wara l-assedju, allura inkluż għal-Belt. Mbagħad kien hemm il-kelma ta' tmiem li kont għamilta jiena da xi riflessjoni ġenerali fuq l-assedju, l-iskop tiegħu, tinsiex dik kienet sena intensiva ħafna.
Kulħadd qed jikkommemora.
Barra l-kommemorazzjoni tal-assedju konna naħerġej mill-kommemorazzjonijiet tal-indipendenza, Repubblika, membership tal-Unjoni Ewropea.
Il-memorja kollettiva
eċetera. Ej viva, kien moment intensiv ħafna f'dak is-sens. Ora kollox ma kollox għandna kollezzjoni friska sabiħa interessanti li għandha tappella lill-pubbliku u l-interessi differenti.
Għal darb'oħra, jiena Liam Gawċi u Emmanuel Buttigieġ nilqgħukom għal programm ieħor Jum fil-ħajja ta'. Miegħi llum huwa bippjaċir kbir li nilqgħu lill-Miss Claudia Garradas li ilha sa mill-2016 tieħu ħsieb il-ħidma ġewwa Malta tal-Malta Study Center. Claudia hija mill-Portugal fejn qabel ma ġiet tgħix Malta kienet il-kuratur tal-Fine Arts Museum fl-Università ta' Porto. Il-baċċalarat tagħha kien fl-istorja tal-artri, segwit mill-aktar studji fil-qasam tal-mużewijiet. Għand esperjenza kbira bħala kuratur tal-kollezzjonijiet miktuba u fil-fatt ix-xogħol tagħha mal-Malta Study Center huwa ndrizzat lejn l-organizzazzjoni ta' arkivi lokali bħala parti mill-proċess li jwassal għall-diġitazzjoni tagħhom. Ma Claudia, illum ħankun għedin nitkelmu ftit dwar l-aspetti tal-ħajja ta' kuljum ta' familja nobli f'pajjiżna fis-seklu 17 u 18. Sintendi peress li Claudia mhux Maltija, l-intervista ħatkun bl-Ingliż, allura issa ħan introduċija bl-Ingliż u ħan nibda insaqsi il-mistoqsijiet bl-Ingliż. Mela, Claudia, first of all, thank you for accepting our invitation to join us on our program, and I want to start off with asking you about what is the nature of your job? What are you exactly doing with these archives?
Well, thank you from my side, of course, for being invited for this program. It's a pleasure to be here. And well, the nature of my work, it's very specific. As you mentioned, I work for the Malta Study Center that is part of the Hill Museum and Manuscript Library. The Hill Museum and Manuscript Library is based in Minnesota. And it's a non-profit organization that is sponsored by the St. John's Abbey and University. And the main mission of the Hill Museum is to identify, digitally photograph, catalog, and archive the contents of manuscripts belonging to threatened communities, and then make all this information available to all users around the world. The Malta Study Center follows HMML's mission, with a focus on the cultural heritage of Malta and the Order of Malta. And my work here in Malta is actually to make sure that these collections are organized, cataloged, and of course digitally photographed to make them available again to the users all over the world through our online catalog, the new VHMML reading room. That's my job here in Malta.
You're able to succinctly put together a huge job description. So you work on archives, and we're going to focus a little bit on archives related to the nobility here. Now, why are such archives important, not just for Maltese local history, but in a broader manner? Why are such archives useful?
Well, recently we had a project at the archive of the Piero family. And it is true that private archives tend to give us information more related to a certain person or a certain family. But in this particular case, and I will focus on that archive because I have a huge experience working on this particular archive. But as I was saying, in this particular case, due to the fact that one of the most important members of the family, Gio Pio de Piero, also became one of the most powerful businessmen in Malta in the 18th century, mm-hmm. we can actually find in this archive a good amount of information related to the Maltese history, but as you said, related to the Maltese history in relation with other countries.
Right.
Because he was a very powerful businessman with business in different parts of, mm-hmm. of the world, mainly in Europe, but he was actually having connections and he had agents in different parts of Europe. So this gives us a pretty good idea about the relations that Malta had by the time. And if we can go through different private archives, perhaps we're going to be surprised and see other different connections. Uh-huh. And I think these kind of archives are true gems to not only to the history of Malta, but the history of Malta overseas.
And I suppose it's mostly letters that you would find, because since he's got these agents.
We have letters, we have private letters, we have account books, we have lists of things that he was buying. So all these combined give us a pretty good idea about not only his business, but all the connections.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So this family had you know, a finger in the pie in all the stuff that was coming into Malta.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you tell us more about which countries they were in contact with and what type of stuff were they bringing in?
Well, from my what I could read, because my main job there was
obviously
to catalog and everything, but
I'm sure you have a small peek into it.
Yes, I'm always very curious, and sometimes certain letters caught my attention, so I actually took some time to read. I could find letters that state his relations with Portugal, with Holland. I actually found a document that he was buying medicines from Holland.
Oh.
Letters from Italy, because he had his business in Italy, Avula, Sicily, but also letters from Marseille, from Lyon, from Austria. So this gives us a pretty good idea how well connected he was. When it comes to the things that I found that he was actually importing to Malta, we can find clothes, food, porcelain from China and coming through Portugal. So these little things, and then you start to make connections. With the account books.
What kind of food was he bringing in?
I found a letter, and of course this got my attention being Portuguese.
Of course.
I could, when I read the name Lisbon, he was importing. I found a document from 1723 that he was importing sugar from Lisbon and cinnamon.
Mm.
It's very specific. Canela fina and cacao as well to Lisbon. Then I found other documents related to sugar that he was importing, and they're very specific, white sugar from Avila. Where he later, GUP, established his own business there.
Uh-huh.
But this is quite interesting. We are talking about white sugar in the first half of the 18th century.
Uh-huh.
Sugar was a luxury by this time. So.
Of course, I imagine he had his agent in Lisbon, because Lisbon was a linchpin to Brazil, to Southeast Asia. And
of course,
that's where you can get these wonderful
spices.
Yes. I also found that he had some problems with the payments of the merchandise. And there's a document that mentions the intervention of the Prime Minister in Portugal.
Okay.
And I know it's the Prime Minister because they write his name.
His name.
So it's quite interesting to see all these
goes all the way to the top.
And all the stuff that he's bringing in, was it for the consumption of the family, or is going to be selling it in Malta to other merchants and all that?
Both. The consumption of the family, and yes, there are documents where he mentions, he writes to whom he's selling those goods and lots of items, including the clothes, the food, and other things.
Mm, okay. Focusing a bit now on your role as a curator,
mm-hmm.
What are the challenges, but also the joys of your position?
Well, I think we might need another interview just to discuss the curator's work in our days. First of all, we need to understand the curator job in this digital world. And secondly, the importance of them when we are talking about paper collections, the importance of these paper collections in 10 years. Will the curators and the scholars, researchers, will still be interested in these kind of collections from physically point of view when everything is digitized and available online? We need to think about the importance that these collections will have. But back to your question, I've been working with paper-based collections since 1997 when I started at the Fine Arts Museum of the University of Porto. And now with these archival and manuscripts, archival material and manuscripts. And I totally agree that everything should be photographed, digital photographed. We have the case of Brazil.
Yes,
a tragedy. And so I totally agree that everything should be photographed and available online as well. But on the other hand, I defend that museums, when it comes to exhibitions and to educational programs or any other activities, they should focus on the objects. Mm-hmm. It's not easy how you can make, for instance, a 12-year-old kid interested on a manuscript or a 17 drawing. Perhaps you need to tell him a story from different point of views and use the digital gadgets and everything. But paper collections, for me, are very, very interesting. Either they're prints and drawings for their artistic nature, mm-hmm. but when I look to documents, to manuscripts and to archival paper, I always look to these objects as a work of art itself, because we have the watermarks, we have the handwriting, we have the techniques used. It's blue ink, brown ink. So if the paper is handmade, if it's not...
Where it's coming from.
Yeah, where it's coming from. The watermarks are beautiful in these documents. Mm. So I always look to paper-based collections as a whole and as an artistic object.
Wonderful.
So let's try and talk about this archive of the De Piro family, and we're trying to get extract information of what was their typical day. Mm-hmm. So how would it start? Do we have any ideas or how?
Well, I from what I read, Gio Pio seemed to be a very organized person, but from what I read and from other theses that were written about Gio Pio. I could also understand, and some private letters as well, that besides being a very strict businessman, and he was also a father and a husband, and they are in the archive, and I totally agree that this is worth it to research. There are private letters between Gio Pio and his wife and the concerns regarding one of the sons' marriage. But on the other hand, he was a father, he was a husband, and it seems that he was a very caring person. But on the other hand, he would not forget that he was a businessman. And I remember when I was reading the diaries, because I have a particular interest in okay. In this kind of subject due to the history of fashion. He did not forget that the amount of money that he paid with lawsuits of his granddaughter and discounted everything in her diary. So this is quite interesting to see. I cannot say with the information that I have how was his day, but I can say that he was, in the same person, we can find a very strict and honest businessman, but also a father and a husband and a grandfather.
So interest in fashion. So was he a man of fashion? His shoes, his buckles, silver buckles, maybe his wigs. Do we have information about that?
We do have information of the items that he was buying. So I would say yes.
Okay.
Because we cannot forget that by then, clothes gave you status.
Yes.
So we can, when we are reading these diaries, we can have a pretty good idea how important these items were for the family status, to show the family status. And we have excellent quality of clothes and the fabrics coming from France, coming from Italy, and very exquisite dresses at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were accurate with what was going on.
Yes.
As we were preparing for this program, you mentioned something that you call the magic lantern. I'm
yes.
sure our listeners would love to hear what yes. the magic lantern was.
Even I was, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. I was reading, he has lots of lists of things that he was buying coming from Lyon and Marseille, and these lists are in French, and sometimes it's not very easy to read the terms, yes. Yeah. Because we're talking about French from the beginning of the 18th century. But in one of these lists, and thank God I had French in school, so I could...
Had the purpose.
Yeah, I could read that he was buying a lanterne magique. This is absolutely amazing. When I read that, I said, oh my God, these guys, they were having fun at home. So this is something, we are talking about the first half of the 18th century in a small island, and this family was actually importing these kind of things, and they were making sure that they were having fun. And for those, the magic lantern is early type of image projector that was employing pictures painted or printed. So they were using this for their family evenings and perhaps inviting some friends and having some drinks. Oh. And I totally think this is worth it to research, because yes. this is the private life, that part that most of the people, they don't know,
of
in
course.
Particularly of the noble family.
And it's the spicy part of
yes,
the whole thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's a sort of... early modern home cinema.
Yes,
entertainment.
Exactly.
5.1 Dolby surround.
Exactly.
How fascinating.
And I'm always interested in details. You mentioned that maybe, you know, they would have a soiree, or that they're bringing in some friends and drinking. Do we have any information about what they are drinking, what they are importing, or any of the food?
Well, there are documents about the importation of wine.
Surely from Avola.
From Avila and from France, because okay. there's a document, a specific that he
now
says
I'm
that
he's
is importing Muscatel,
yes,
and Rapé from France.
Nice.
So they
Beautiful.
Were
a
yes,
very, a very sweet wine, yeah. extremely popular at the
yes,
time.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And do you know if he had contacts, obviously, with the Grand Master? Obviously, he was quite high up in the high circles
yes,
as a family.
Yes, yes, he had contacts with the Grand Master. He was, let me see if I say this, the proper, what is the name? He was the administrator.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the
Grand Master's purse.
Yes,
was it?
Yes,
yes.
So, yeah. And
we're talking
he was
Grand Master Pereios
at the moment. Yes.
You would pronounce it much better than me.
Pereios.
That's how I have to say it.
He was the administrator of the Grand Master Pereios. And he was, we need to look at GUPU as a lawyer, first of all. And second of all, he married with a very important daughter, with a daughter of a very important person.
And her name
Gorgeon,
was?
The Gorgeon family.
Mm, okay.
So that's...
Hence the French wine.
Yes. So he was extremely smart. He married very well with Elena Gorgeon. And he made sure that he continued to secure his wealth and his family progression
yes. uh-huh.
By marrying his daughter and his granddaughter with noble family as well.
Who was yes. paving the way for the future.
Exactly, exactly. So he was very well connected within the order. And I believe there are some documents, manuscripts, where he has the accounts with the order. And he was also responsible, and that I know, again, because of my personal interest, that he was buying the clothes for the slaves of the palace.
Oh, interesting.
That's very interesting.
He
extremely
was responsible for buying the clothes for the slaves of the palace.
So obviously, because the slaves of the palace are going to be, you know, higher quality slaves, they had to look the part.
They had to look the part.
They had to look the part.
Exactly. And we have the clothes for winter and the clothes for summer.
It, of course, you know, complicates in a good way this idea of the knights and the Maltese. It's not one group on one hand and the other on the other hand, as if they live in exactly. separate spheres. Mm-hmm. The spheres actually come together a lot, and someone like Dropio de Piro is
living very close to the palace
yes,
as well.
Living yes, living physically close
physically
to the palace. You're from Portugal. a country which Malta had contact with, as you've been saying, in the early modern period, but it does tend to be a bit forgotten. I think we tend to speak of the Castilians and the Aragonese, you know, the Spanish a bit more. What are your impressions of the historic relationship between Malta and Portugal?
Well, since I arrived to Malta, that I have a feeling that the studies and all the research works that have been done tend to focus on the period of the knights, in particular Manuel de Villena and Pinto da Fonseca. Mm-hmm. But I do believe the relations, I do believe that there are more relations than during the period of the Grand Masters. We had two other Grand Masters that sometimes we tend to forget. One of them is Luís de Vasconcelos. He only had a 6 months reign here in Malta. And I'm pretty sure there are some documentation related to him.
If I'm not mistaken, he had quite a big career in the colonial
And with Brazil as well.
Yes.
And our first Grand Master actually dates from the 12th century. If I'm not mistaken, let me see here my notes, which was the 13th century, he was the first son of the King of Portugal, Fernando Afonso of Portugal. He was the 11th Grand Master of the Order of Jerusalem by then. But just to give you a little hint, I found under the Piero archive two letters written in Portuguese dated from 1702 of three brothers asking permission to the king to get into the ship of Captain Isnard to come to Malta. Hmm. So 1702, it's...
Three brothers.
Asking permission to come to Malta. So I'm pretty sure there's a lot.
There is a lot.
There's a lot to discover, a lot of the communication that we haven't seen yet.
So we look forward to a nice article by your good self about this connection.
Why not?
There is a lot, and the connections are at times, as Manuel was saying, not forgotten. Just you don't realize about the connections. Again, I will end it with saying the Madeira wine. Port wine was extremely, extremely popular in Malta for centuries, especially during this period.
And there are Maltese knights, just to give you this, there are Maltese people going to Madeira in that period. And I will finish with this, I have a friend that her surname in Portugal right now is Caravana. But I know that her great grandfather was Caruana. She very wrote to me about that.
There's a Maltese connection everywhere.
Claudia, thank you so much. This has been fascinating window onto the 18th century. As is Mia, grazie tal kontumana, jiena Emanuel Buttigieg u Liam Gauci in Selmulkov un intaqaw il-ġimgħa d-dieħla. Grazie.
Għadkom kem smajtu. Jum fil-ħajjata. Bi produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Liam Gauci fl-imkien ma' Emanuel Buttigieg.